This is the Horse Radio Network.
This is episode 481 of the Dressage Radio Show on the Horse Radio Network, brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products and Total Saddle Fit. Tonight we have USDF President and USEF Youth Coach George Williams joining us. We're going to help guide you through second level test 3, and Katie Pogue will give a great trainer tip from the judge's perspective.
Stanfield from Georgetown, Kentucky.
And this is Philip Parks from Rockwood, Ontario, and you're listening to the Dressage Radio Show with our main man producer, Glenn the Geek.
Hey, guys. I am so excited. We're only a couple of weeks away from WAG.
I know. It's crazy.
Yeah.
We're all going to be bunking together in a nice place about 10 minutes from WAG, and I wanted to put a plug in for the 2018 WAG show, 2018wagshow.com. Samantha Clark and I have been doing that show for a while now, and we have one or two more episodes before WAG, and then we'll be doing daily wrap-up shows during the World Equestrian Games, and that's in cooperation with Horse Illustrated. They are going to be carrying the shows live, as well as you can find it on any podcast player. Just search for 2018wagshow.com or 2018wagshow on your podcast player. And Reese and Philip are going to come in and help us with the dressage coverage, aren't you?
We are looking forward to it. We can't
do
wait.
Our best. Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to be there. Yeah, since we're all bunking together. We may not be talking by the end of the week, but yes, we will be there.
Everybody's going to be bunking together for this particular show.
Yes, I mean, there's going to be a lot of fun parties.
But you know what? We'll take bunking together to be 10 minutes away compared to a lot of people driving a lot further than that. So
yeah, I know. If you're looking for housing, Glenn, do you have any tips on that?
There's still housing available. If you look around, it's actually, because they've sold less tickets than they predicted, the housing's gotten a little cheaper in the last week. Yeah. Okay. So if you looked before, look again. And also double check the ticket prices, because some of them have come down. They've sold, from what we've heard, a little over 100,000 tickets, and they were expecting 400,000. So that's why some of the ticket prices have come down. We've heard a little bit of complaining from people who paid a larger price, and now they've come down. So, but if you were thinking about going and you were putting it off because of housing and because of ticket prices, maybe take a look again and you might be able to get a last-minute deal. Actually, what really happened is Reese and Philip said, you guys are doing a daily wrap-up show and you're going to talk about dressage, and Glenn, you're going to do that? And they said, no, we're not letting him do that. So we will come and help with that cover. That's exactly what happened.
They're not letting
the Horse Radio Network be embarrassed.
Well, we just don't miss a party for sure. So we're really looking forward to it. And that's in a couple weeks. So I love it.
One other thing, and we're very proud of this, and you guys have both been on the show, Horses in the Morning, which is kind of our flagship show for the Horse Radio Network, reached 2,000 episodes on Wednesday. And it's one of the best we can tell, one of about 15 or 20 podcasts in the world that have ever reached 2,000 episodes. Wow. So we're very proud of that. And we're excited that people listen. And we hope, if you haven't tried it yet, you come over and take a listen. It's horsesinthemorning.com. And it's a daily show. Starts at 9 a.m. every day. And it's a lot of fun. Plus, you might learn something along the way.
Congratulations, Glenn. That's amazing. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's a lot of talking.
we get it. Yeah, no, that's fantastic. Congratulations. That's great. That's really cool.
Okay, now I'm done bragging. It's all yours.
Oh, well, we have a lot going on here in the Horse Radio Network, and you can always find that on horseradionetwork.com along with the links to our show. So fantastic. Well, we've got a great show today. We're going to get into it because we got a lot of content today. So our first guest is George Williams, and I hope you enjoy his interview.
Well, this evening we are honored to have George Williams. He is the president of USDF and the USEF Youth Coach for Dressage on the program. George, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, we've had you on before, but this is the first time, as we are the official podcast of USDF, so it's even more fun to have you. And it sounds like you are on your way to Chicago for the USEF National Championships, right?
Right. This is the Festival of Champions. So it is the national championships for for along with youth, it is the ponies, the children, it's FEI ponies, the children, juniors and young riders, as well as the U25. And then, of course, for the senior riders, it's the Grand Prix, the I1, the Developing Horse Grand Prix, Developing Horse Prix St. George, and the Young Horse Classes. So the 4, 5, and 6-year-olds.
It is going to be
quite a championship.
It's going to be very busy. Yeah.
Whoa. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Well, we're so thankful you made time for us this week. We love it. Yeah. Well, last week we had a great talk with Callie and Anna about the European tour that that those girls went on with you. And we wanted to talk to you a little bit about sort of what the goals are with that and where the youth programs are going in the United States.
The trip they went on is the European Young Rider Tour, which is a terrific opportunity. We had three riders on it. You had, as you mentioned, you had Anna Weniger and Callie Jones, and Ben Ebling was our third rider. This is a tour that we put together. They have to qualify. They qualify through CDIY scores. So it's really the leading young riders in the country. We go to Europe for approximately 6 weeks. This year we did 2 CDIs and the Y, the young rider division of the CDIs, as a warm up. And the final competition is a competition called Future Champions, which is in Hagen, Germany. And it is a Nations Cup. It's an amazing competition. It's a Nations Cup for young riders, but it's also a Nations Cup for FEI ponies, juniors, children, and the young riders, but in dressage and jumping. So it's a huge competition. They had approximately 800 horses with, I think, around 22 countries in total participating. So that's really the finale of our tour. And then, what we build up to. So we started with Compiègne, France, with a CDI there, which is, as I said, as a warm-up show, which was a very nice show to start with. and then we went to Aachen Dressage Days, which is sometimes referred to as Little Aachen. It is, of course, in the show, at the showgrounds where CHIO Aachen is held. And the dressage is in the same stadium, so it's quite an impressive competition in that
sense. A similar experience. Right?
Yeah.
So in doing this, really what we're trying to do is to introduce our young riders to European competitions. They have a chance to go against their peers from Europe, I think, which is a terrific opportunity. They can see the quality that is there, but I think... And I have a feeling that Anna and Callie may have mentioned as well. Not only do they see the quality that's there, but they also realize that they fit right in. So they can be very competitive.
They did say that, actually. They did. You've been very proud.
Yeah.
Yep.
that's one of the things we're hoping for, is for them to, of course, be motivated and to, for our riders to get better and better, but also to realize that they're starting from a fairly good place. And should be very proud of where they're at and be able to build very confidently from there. I think it's also going into Hagen is a team experience. So it definitely helps to prepare them for down the road if they want to participate or continue as senior athletes. They have this team experience behind them. They have the whole European experience behind them. They get used to the nuances, if you will, of how CDIs are run in other countries, some of the language barriers and some of the, I don't know if the right word's customs or traditions, but the way things are sometimes done in Europe versus how they're done here. So I think it's a real eye-opener and a great experience. But it also just prepares them and gives them confidence. And I always sort of joke that for me, when we go, we want to do as well as we can. We want our riders to really medal at the future champions. However, in a lot of ways, we're really setting the groundwork and preparing them and helping form sort of start networking with Europe and just preparing them for the future. So when they do go back later, they can go back that much better prepared.
Yeah. That one makes total sense.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, talk to us a little bit about, you know, the challenges of this type of experience and you know, going across for anybody who's never maybe taken a horse that far,
right,
or the shipping and logistics, you know, how much time and, like, when do you start planning this and putting it together? Because I think, you know, the amount of effort that goes into this kind of a journey starts really early, doesn't it?
It does. And the, you know, they apply, and I hate to say when the application deadline is because I'll get it wrong, but the way the qualifying period works is they have to get some scores between January 1st and the end of the qualifying period, which is around May 1st in that time frame. But they are allowed to use scores from the previous year's festival champions and also the previous year's North American youth championships. But they do have to have more recent scores. So I think, and you know, of course, we watch those scores and we watch how the ranking list is going. And those that we see that are really look like they're going to be the ones, you know, to be at the top of the ranking list at the end of the qualifying period, we start having conversations with them in March to start sort of get them thinking, to make sure that they have a shipping agent that they can work with. We you know, we have the calendar worked out, so we try to start working with them about finding housing. And part of this, I'm glad you brought this up, because part of what this is we have them do all of their shipping arrangements. You know, we're there to help them and guide them, but we're not doing it for them in that sense. And once we get there, I work as the chef to keep. I help them at the competitions, but we're really trying to prepare them, you know, and let them learn how to deal with the shipping, transport within Europe once they're there, ground transport. We handle the entries at the shows because that's how it works with the CDIs and the, you know, when you're competing mm-hmm. outside of the U.S. and also currently now actually with the FEI we have the online entry system that works through the through your national federation. So, but we really try to make certain that they have to handle all those details and get involved in those details. So once again, they're better prepared when they go back the next time. And so these arrangements do take a while. You have to make sure that their paperwork and the health papers are, you know, set for the horses. And so that's one reason why we talk to them fairly early on to make sure that all the inoculations and those requirements are all up to date.
Yeah, and just even your own passport. I mean, just there are some logistics
exactly.
there.
Exactly.
You know, like, yeah, like there's some yeah. things, which is exactly what you need to learn at that age. Oh, it just sounds like yeah. a phenomenal experience. And so, George, just changing gears a little bit, you know, wanted to change the conversation a little bit of, you know, how do our riders, our youth riders, they're interested and they want to get to you as the youth coach. How does that happen? I mean, kind of give us the ground rules on how that happens and how can they figure that information
out? Yeah, we have several ways that we do it. And when I say we, Charlotte Bridal is the assistant youth coach. We work very closely together in all the programs that we do. There are different, you know, sort of stages, if you will. We have through the USDF and USEF, we have our regional youth, their junior young rider clinics that we conduct. There's always one in each region. It is the goal anyway, to have one in each region every year. So that's one way that we do it. We also, through the Discover Dressage, we were able to develop or create the USEF, USDF Emerging Athlete Program. So it's the real titles, the Discover Dressage, USEF, USDF Emerging Athlete Program. And with that, through USEF, we do run some clinics throughout the year. They're really evaluation observation sessions where Charlotte and I, you know, work with the riders, watch the riders, and evaluate the riders. The emerging athlete program is fairly new, and in that, the top athletes, based really on their performances, are invited to be members of the program. So right now, I would have to double check, but it's approximately 12 riders that are part of that program. It is currently made up of young riders and a few, two or three U25 riders. And those riders, their benefits that they receive, we do video evaluations and you know, giving feedback on videos. They have things like a statistical analysis of their scores that we're able to offer through Global Analytics. And there are other benefits. They have a little bit more access to the physiotherapist, mm-hmm. and we try to make sure that they have access to our team vet or those that work with the team vet. The other, you know, those vets. So we did. So I think the program is new, and we're refining it as we go. I guess tweaking it is a better word as we go. But we're really trying to, you know, make it, help them find, you know, with their learning and give them in their training and just giving them guidance and also helping them strategize.
Yeah, absolutely. So this week at the Festival of Champions, you're also there, right? If a rider needs a coach or needs some help, you're also there in that role this week. Is that how it works?
Yes. Yeah, both Charlotte and I are at, you know, we're here on behalf and because of USEF. We do it at the festival. We're available for any of the riders that would want help. And we also do it at the North American Youth Championships.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So, or any of the trainers. And our goal is always really to work very closely with all of the trainers and private coaches, because I think we feel very strongly that it has to be a joint effort. It's a very large country to begin with. As you know, it can be a difficult sport, and we're very spread out around the country. So we feel, you know, that the only way we can be effective is if we really approach it by working as closely as we can with the private trainers of the youth. And if they don't have one, we're certainly happy to step in. And sometimes, you know, we're just standing beside the trainer and helping the trainer we're there helping the trainer, giving a little bit of feedback to the trainers as their students warm up. So we're here in a sense to be used anyway.
Yeah.
The athlete and want to use us. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, what a great opportunity. This was not even really an option when I was a young rider, which we're not going to talk about when that was, but it wasn't really an option. So it's so fun that this has all changed. And if riders have some questions, is the best way for them to figure out some more information on the USDF or USEF websites? How do they do that?
The Discover Dressage Emerging Athlete Program is run primarily through the USEF office. So the best thing is to contact the dressage department at the USEF on that, and they can get the feedback. The regional clinics, and of course, any information leading up to the North American Youth Championships, the USDF handles a lot of that. They handle the regional clinics, and then they also handle the qualifying criteria and the questions that go along with that for the North American Youth Championships.
Excellent. Well, George, thank you so much for your time. You're super busy this week, and we really appreciate it. We look forward to having you back on another time.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Well, right after this commercial break from Kentucky Performance Products, we're going to come back and Phil and I are going to continue our series on the third test of each level. And we're going to do second level test 3, the beginning part this time.
This Nutrition Minute is brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products, the company that simplifies your search for research-proven nutritional supplements at kppusa.com.
The horse that matters to you matters to Kentucky Performance Products. Researchers have confirmed that as horses age, they naturally become less sensitive to insulin and more susceptible to health problems caused by too much sugar in the diet. One way to reduce the sugar content in a horse's diet is to replace sugar-laden grains with a high-fat supplement. Fat is an extraordinary energy source. It is readily utilized by the horse and contains more than 2 times the calories of sugary grains. Equijoule Stabilized Rice Bran is an excellent fat supplement. It contains a balanced calcium to phosphorus ratio and won't cause mineral imbalances when added to the diet. Its all-natural ingredients are high in healthy fat and fiber. Best of all, Equijoule allows owners to easily replace the calories previously supplied by sugary grains. When you need to add healthy calories to your horse's diet, choose Equijoule. To learn more, visit Kentucky Performance Products at kppusa.com.
We are coming back to our segment. I'm actually really excited about this segment because up here, actually, I'm going to a horse show. It's Monday today. We're recording on a Monday. It's a little early because I'm going to a horse show on Wednesday, and I am actually riding the second level test 3. So I'm not going to lie. I'm kind of excited. We're going over it so I can get a few extra points. follow me, who's been following along. Big Mike is going to do this test. And this is a hard test, actually. So second level test 3, I'm just going to remind everybody the purpose. It's to confirm that the horse demonstrates correct basics, having achieved thrust required in first level, and now accepts more weight on the hindquarters collection. Moves with an uphill tendency, especially in the medium gates, is reliably on the bit, greater degree of straightness, bending, suppleness, throughness, balance, and self-carriage is required than first level.
A lot more.
A lot. And I'm more kind of laughing.
Straightness, bending, suppleness, balance, self-carriage.
Yes.
Not just a little bit by the time the second test 3.
Yes.
You're doing real dressage now. Yeah.
Yes. Big Mike and I can feel it. Yeah, we are right there. We're feeling the big jump here. I'm not gonna lie. Big Mike and I are you know,
challenging.
Yeah, this is big stuff. Big Mike's a 6-year-old, so this is like the first time he's ever had to do this stuff. So I am in the second level doldrums as everyone
doldrums,
else.
Yeah.
The doldrums. It is a hard level. You know, like with a 6-year-old, it's the first time he's ever been asked to do these type of things. You know, the throughness, the balance.
Of, yeah, the collection, you know, the real deal. Yeah.
Yeah. So it actually starts out, it's not too bad when you start, and then it gets bad quick. So A, enter collected trot, X, halt, salute, proceed, collected trot. You know, that's the same.
Yeah, this is right away. Yep. It says collected in the test.
Collected.
So it must be pretty collected. Now, I tell people, because it just as a little side note, that if you only have a judge sitting at C, it doesn't have to be that collected, because it's hard for a judge to see at that, you know. But if you got one at C and you got one at B, then you're going to have to show a little bit of extra compression, a little bit shorter strides. You know, the horse should be elevating in each stride. It's important that, you know, your collection is not just slower strides and not just collection has to have that element of impulsion, that you're still always going forward. You know, it's a hard element just to be able to create that nice collected trot, the horse being engaged and covering less ground. But with all that energy that's covering less ground, you have to be getting more, I always tell you, more air time, right? Yep. More, you know, so don't just compress the strides without creating that, a little bit of that air time or schwung, right? Schwung, as the Germans say.
Right.
So,
It's all the trot is sitting, which I can tell you is a challenge for me. You know, because again, that's strength of the back, right? And the compression, and then they have to carry you while doing those things.
Well, yeah.
So it is very hard. So that starts from the very beginning. You are sitting and you are in collected trot. Welcome to second level.
Yeah. And you're going to halt at X, no walk, right?
No walk, you know, immobile, for minimum
square,
3 seconds.
You know, at the right place. Yeah, all those little things that maybe at first level that, you know, they sort of let be a little bit now have to be pretty darn perfect.
Yeah, they're not going to let that be at second level. It's three, because again, second level three means you're getting closer to third level. You know, that's that's what the judge wants to see. Like, you know, they want to, in their mind, can in a couple months or good work, can they move to third level, for example? All right, so C, track left. HX, F, change rein, medium trot, F, collected trot. And then there is a number three is the transitions between H and F, transition H and F. So not only do you have the medium trot and sitting trot, you are now, you have points for the transitions in and out.
It's and the terminology medium is not lengthening. Mm-mm. It's a, you know, it's a real clearly defined change in the gait.
Right.
And a moderate change in size of stride. Yeah. And
right. The frame needs to change.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, be very clear about making your turn left. You're going to have to also show a little bit more balance and engagement in the corner, a little bit deeper corner, and a clear transition at H. You know, changing the trot. It's a different trot. You have to really think it's not just a longer trot. It's a different trot altogether. So
right, or faster. You know, that's the other thing.
Faster, yeah, exactly. Same tempo, same rhythm. So.
And you have to go the length of the arena, which kids?
60 meters.
Say a little prayer for me on Wednesday. Like, that's a long way on a young horse. That's like, oh boy.
Yeah, it's a common problem to sort of peter out. Near the end. So what I try and do is make the transition in H and then a little bit of refresh of the trot at X.
Yes.
You know, and sometimes I see the horses waver because they're not quite straight enough. You know, straightness is going to help you achieve a better balance and not losing your energy. If the horse takes a little step to the side or this side or that side or is, you know, leaning in and out, it's very hard to keep a really consistent medium trot all across that full length of the arena. So, you know, it's okay to have to do a few strides and then, you know, press them forward a little bit again to make sure they're going to make it all the way across and then press them as you collect them back at F to make a clear transition at F.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's clear. That's why they put an extra mark in for the transitions because that's such an important part of this movement.
Yeah. And that won't go away. That'll be there. Forever. It's in the Grand Prix. Like that's going to always, from this point on, be there. All right. So you ride the medium trot. You ride an awesome transition back. Then you have your shoulder in K to E, shoulder in right. So
that
again,
doesn't mean that you're not going to get like judged as you make your way across the short side. Right. I think, you know, even though it's not, you know, there's no number, there's no like collected trot across the short side, the judge is watching.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
and what I try, and again, if you have only one judge at A, that's their opportunity to look at the side profile of the horse, and so you better have energy across that short side because the judge is going to have that picture in their mind of the, you know, when you're coming down the long sides, you're more and down the center line, you're more or less the judge can't really see that profile. But every time you cross the short side, they're looking at that and they want to see your horse bouncing across the short side, making beautiful, short, energetic, quality steps. So it's not a, you know, do your transition, then take a break and, you know, get prepared for your shoulder in. It's, you know, now show the judge a short side in two really nice corners.
And you need the corner, right? The second corner to ride a proper shoulder in. This was my fault today while schooling. You know, I kind of came through and I didn't have enough bend in the corner. So, and then I wasn't able to keep him on the outside rein. So I was like, oh, that was a very badly ridden corner on my dime. So,
yeah, that'll show up in shoulder in for sure because
yes.
You need that bending and you need that energy and to make the correct angle and all that good stuff. So,
right.
What are some common things that we see in shoulder in that are not correct?
Well, I think a lot of times I see a lot of neck in. You know, you actually have to position the shoulder off the track, you know, and not pull on the inside rein. I see that a lot. I see a lot of the angle changing in and out. You know, you need a consistent angle. What you start with is what you have to finish. In this case, you're going to be at E. You have to go from the corner marker, which is K, to E. That's what the directive says. Also, as this happens to me, you know, I lose my quality of trot. You know, my guy goes, oh my goodness, I have to move my body and trot at the same time. So there's a lot of things that have to happen in that sort of short amount of time. And, you know, as horses get older, they're a little bit more used to it. This is one of the first times they're going to actually have to do that. And it's a little challenging.
Yeah. I mean, if you've shown a really nice, energetic trot across the short side, we don't want to see any less trot as you make your little angle into the shoulder in.
Which and, all the horses are going to want to do. I mean, that's a
pretty common thing. It's hard, right? Yeah,
right. They're going to like, I'll just slow down and lose the collection there. And you're like, oh, no, please don't do that. Okay. So then we have a 10-meter circle. Again, this is actually a pet peeve of mine in this test and riding it and coaching it. It is a 10-meter circle. And that score is equal to the shoulder in score and it's equal to the haunches in score. I mean, it is its own block. And I can't stand when people don't ride a quality circle. You also see it up in the Pre-St. George. Like, if it's a 10-meter circle, ride a solid quality shoulder in. That's really important to do that. I mean, sorry, a good circle out of the shoulder in. So you need to make sure you make your turn. You have the horse on the outside rein. You ride the correct geometry, which sounds so silly, but that's really important.
This circle here is a test of your shoulder in, actually. So if your horse is bulging out through the shoulder, you know, if that you've made your angle with your inside rein and your inside leg, and now you have to ride a circle, it's very, very common to see the first half of that circle being way too big, you know, and, you know, going from bulging out to bulging out even more.
Because which is
if you actually have to straighten the horse slightly to make it around that circle in the right shape and size. Mm-hmm. You know, so what I try and do is, you know, the last two strides of my shoulder in, I'm actually going to gently straighten the horse a little bit so that I know that the horse is going to listen to my outside aid so I can turn and make, you know, and make the turn more correct and not be, you know, falling out as I'm trying to make the circle.
Well, and that's a good point, right? It's more almost the way you ride it versus someone seeing it, right? It's not that. You just need to reposition the horse on the outside rein there. I think that's really important.
And then use it. Yeah.
And then use it. So then you're going to ride your 10-meter circle, and then you ride E to H, traverse right. So again, this is kind of a test of the circle, right? The haunches in is the last step of that 10-meter circle. So the circle is to set you up for the haunches in. But with that said, if you slide your outside leg back too quickly, the horse can canter. The horse can bring the haunches in on the circle, which of course the judge is looking for. So you have to be careful that you don't have that.
Yeah. As a little bit of a cheat, you know, like you don't finish the horse, you know, have the hind legs on the wall and then bring them back in.
No.
You know, as part of training, you know, I always use the corner or use the circle in traverse that the hind legs are already, are already a little bit off the track. And then I'm just going to keep them, you know, a little bit off the track. I don't allow the horse to get on, you know, get back to the track and then try and push them off again. So it's a little tricky, you know, in the way that you ride it, because like you said, if you start the traverse a little early, then your circle is going to collapse. Your timing has to be so good in these movements, you know, from shoulder in to circle to traverse, that, you know, anything you do, you know, a hair too early, a stride too early is going to cause a problem.
Yes,
and obviously
a big one.
A stride too late will also cause it. So this is really, you know, the second level is a test as much of the movements of the rider's timing in the movements, you know, because it has to be in the right stride. So I'm just going to keep the hind legs in from the circle, follow the bend of the circle down the wall in a really nice traverse that has all the energy that you created way back when you were across the short side, right? No loss of energy.
Yeah,
it's really common to see in traverse, and it's really common for young horses building their strength. But I mean, this is not training. This is a test, right? And in the test, you have to show that the horse has enough strength to carry it from shoulder in to a small circle to a traverse. This is a it's a tough question of the horse. And if you lose, you know, even for 2-3 strides, if you lose the quality of the energy, the quality of the trot, you're going to get dinged.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, so.
Yeah. So then you're going to ride a really good quality short side again. Again, you're going across by the judge, so you want to show him a nice collective.
Yeah, you can refresh that trot again, get him ready, you know, work him a little bit across the short side so that he's ready.
You're ready.
If you did lose some energy, you're getting it back, and you're going to power across in your MXK change rein medium trot.
Absolutely.
If your horse has got a little bit tired and is not, you know, is not in front of your leg enough, that's your, again, the short side is your opportunity. It's a movement. It's your opportunity to make that happen. So,
yep.
You know, don't give up and don't say, oh, he's too lazy now. And, you know,
No. You got a lot more trot work. Get him refreshed on that short side.
Think ahead and think, okay, I can get this back. I can save it. You know, I can use the medium trot to get that horse going again.
You got it. And so then again, the same thing, the transitions are scored for that medium trot. And then we just do the same exercise to the left. We do the shoulder in, F to B, your 10-meter circle at B, and B to M traverse. So kind of everything we said to the right applies to the left. I would say the biggest thing is, you know, horses are going to be better left or right. You know what I mean? Each horse has a stiff and a hollow side. So, you know, you need to have schooled that and sort of have a plan for that as you come in. My big mic happens to be easier to the left with the shoulder in and haunches in. The right shoulder in is the hardest. He's pretty perfect, Phil, let's be real.
typically you'll see a horse with, for instance, the right shoulder in is good and the right travers is not so good, and then the left shoulder in is not so, you know what I mean? Like
I would say for Mike, yes, exactly, because that's how they have to move their body. His left shoulder in is easier and his right haunches in, so that kind of makes sense on why that would be that way. So yes, exactly. But I mean, obviously he's perfect, so
but again, that's a common problem. You're like, oh, and the left, he's so good at, you know, he's so good at one thing and not good at the other. That's very, very common.
Right.
It's just, you know, in your training, spend a little bit more time, you know, on the things that are weaker. Right. And,
absolutely.
And the goal, you know, the goal in the end of these suppling exercises is actually to make the horse equal and even and straighter.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely.
So you're achieving the goal of straightness by working the weaker point.
Right. And so. I will say, I mean, just for my own, you know, I really don't like second level, but it's sort of where this horse happens to be. And he needs to show a little bit so he gets to be good at horse shows. And, you know, this is where we are.
Some miles.
You know, need some miles. So I said, you know, I hate second level, but you know, this is going to be good for him. And I will say, for an exercise in my own riding, this has been very helpful because, you know, I have a very, I rode this test in June and it was okay, but, you know, I schooled it today and he was really good. And I can actually feel how sort of the development has helped from June to now. I guess we're almost the end of August, you know, so 2 months, let's say, of training, he's so much better and he's more reliable and he's stronger. And so it has been fun to sort of show the test. We showed second level.
It's a great evaluation tool. Yeah. And, you know, even
really
some days when it feels like, oh, are we really, you know, going anywhere with this training or, you know, that kind of feeling, then you're like, you know, you put him through a test and you're like, oh, you know,
he
can carry himself a little bit more. And,
get
you know, the four track travers is really come along, you know, that kind of thing. So, like you said, it's not really a fun level, because there's so many quick questions and like we talked about a little bit, the timing of how the horse has to be really good off your aids and really quick off your aids, and it just seems like you're turning a lot and doing a lot of stuff.
Yeah, you are doing because they're
in a short amount of time, and it's. It's tough.
Mine is like moving a big boat around because he's a big guy. And there's a lot of moving that big guy around. When he learns, it'll be easier. So then actually there are some significant questions that come up after the travers to the left. At C, you ride a halt and rein back 3 to 4 steps and proceed in medium walk. You know, you want to go in and you want to have a square halt, which from experience is already a tricky one. So
here's a big thing, immobile.
Yes. Immobile
on this halt is difficult. Immobile. Yeah, because if you've been training at home though, and you've ridden this test quite a bit, the horse will be one step ahead of you and ready to step back a little bit too quick. I see that a lot, and you know, so and you're at home training, only do the rein back half the time.
Right.
So, you know, so that the horse learns to stand long enough.
Yeah, or half the time, or you rein back two steps, walk forward, rein back again. I mean, there's a lot of things in the rein back.
Yeah, there's different things, yeah, to introduce the idea that it's not always halt, rein back, three, four steps, or, you know, whatever, you know. So mix it up a little bit so that your horse is still sharp on your aids and will wait the 3 seconds for immobility. And then you're going to rein back. You want to have this trained well enough that you're not pulling on the horse's face and causing problems. So, you know, we see that a little bit where the horse is not really trained to do the rein back with easy aids and quiet riding. You know, because any disturbance in the top line is going to get marks down. Mm. And any kind of nose curling to the chin, that's, in the, you know, either the horses resist and the pole will go up, or the horses want to hide behind the contact and their nose goes into the chest. Both are wrong.
Right.
Has to be, yeah, you know, in the same frame, and they have to step back evenly. Active steps, not dragging their toes. So the steps have to be backwards, but active. They pick up their feet in the diagonal pairs and clear, you know, clear strides. 1, 2, 3, 4 or 1, 2, 3 and immediately out of that rein back. So there should not be
in the walk
rein back,
this time.
Three strides, yeah. Halt for 5 seconds again, and then walk forward.
Walk out, yeah.
Because it doesn't serve the purpose. So the purpose of the rein back is to get the horses balanced onto the haunches, still connected, still round. But the real payoff is stepping forward out of it. So you've now put the horse's weight on the haunches, and now they have to learn to step forward out of it. That's a super straightening, a super training exercise for strengthening those hocks and that hind leg. But if you halt and then go forward again, you're not, that doesn't serve the purpose of it. So rein back can be quite tricky in training it for the horses. You know, maybe on another show, we'll give you tips for rein back and getting it right. And I'm sure we've covered it before. But it must be correct in this test and not rhythm problems, not engagement problems, connection problems.
Absolutely.
So. There you go. And then you're walking forward, medium walk. Up to H, you're turning left.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Between G and M, shorten the stride, half the turn on haunches left.
The dreaded walk pirouettes, or turn on the haunches. Stop.
I think, I really hope in the rewriting of these tests, they're going to take them out of
second level. Phil, I think we can only dream of that, but we're not sure. We haven't seen the test.
Well, yeah, it's just this.
Yeah. So they're really hard to teach and they're really hard to ride. Regularity and quality of the shortened walk strides, activity of the hind legs bend, and fluency in the turn. So, first of all, I don't know. From a rider's perspective, I am always pretty good at doing these because I have a little bit of experience with that. It's very hard if you don't have the experience of that. But one of the exercises that Phil has helped me with is having, this is sort of, you need to build this before you do it. So one of the things you have to do is, or I do a lot of turning the haunches and turning the shoulders in my warm up with my horses, even my youngsters. So when we get to this point, they kind of already have the idea or know that they're able to move their shoulders and move their haunches. And I'm able to sort of step by step help them with that. That's one of the things that I like to tell people to do with the turn on the haunches is go and ride kind of fairly quick, shoulder in to haunches in. At this point, they should know a little bit of half pass to help with the actual turn on the haunches and the preparation of it, so that when you go to ride the turn on the haunches, the horse has a clue on how to do it. Because this is one that Phil and I can tell you, we both, as trainers, it's a little bit of hair pulling to do these.
Yeah, it is hard. It's hard for everyone. It's really hard if you're if you're a rider that is also training, you know, training your horse sort of at the same time. Much easier if your horse knows this, you know, this move. But it's so easy to lose balance, even for half a stride. If you lose balance, you're going to lose the activity. If you lose the activity, the horse will spin on the, you know. So you just really have to have them on your aids, and you really, and the horse has to really want to be continuing to move forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
as a trainer, if this move is executed with good balance and good energy, and the turn is big, I'm totally happy with that.
Yeah, no how it, rather no big.
Yeah.
Yes. Rather big with stepping hind legs.
Yeah. I never know how the judge is going to judge it.
Yeah.
I think this is one of the moves that has the biggest discrepancy in between judges on you know what score a big sort of pirouette gets and what score, you know.
Yes.
Again, is another one of my pet peeves is that I think it's unclear. You get unclear messaging from judges on what's a good pirouette. You know, it says turn on the haunches, but I get comments all the time like needs to be
like
smaller,
that.
Needs to be smaller, needs to be smaller, and it drives me crazy. So, follow your trainer's advice.
Yeah,
they know your horse a lot better than a judge who sees it, at, you know, in a moment and whatever. And so, and it's just a case of keep plugging away and keep developing your feel for pirouettes, because this is a movement that really takes a lot of feel, and
yes.
Probably 2-3 years. Before you even, you know, even get, that doesn't mean you have to, because it goes all the way through, like almost every test, until I1 when you stop having to ride it again.
So, yeah, it's going to be around a while.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's hard work, and, you know, as much education as you get about watching them on the internet and, you know, getting advice through literature, all those kinds of things that can really help. You know, and maybe one day somebody says something in a different way that you haven't heard before, and all of a sudden it'll click for you.
Well, that happened to me this week in my lesson. Yeah. You know, Scott said, hey, it needs to be a little smaller up front. I was like, oh, maybe if I shift the shoulders over, that was it. I mean, if I just move the shoulders over a little bit more, and I felt like a rock star. So, yeah, it's one of those things that it's just, they take a lot of time. And my particular horse is a huge guy. He's huge. And so it's a lot of parts to move for him. And but I do start those. I do not start those the week before the horse show.
Yeah,
you need
sure.
to be schooling
again,
those.
Yeah, you have to be, again, this is a really big timing thing. Again, you know, you need outside rein at the right time, and the outside leg at the right time, and the inside leg at the right time. Like, you know, you just have to really develop for that feel for when they're about to lose. Because once they, like I said, once they lose their balance, and you're going to lose your activity, you're going to lose your pirouette, and it's, you know, it's not easy to get it back.
No.
Right? So again, you just have to be, next time I'm going to be half a stride earlier with my inside leg, and I'm going to catch that problem. And as usual, the, you know, horse will do decent pirouettes on one side, and then the other side will be just feeling, you know, kind of like a mess sometimes. And sometimes you get like really make it better, and then next week, you know, you take one step forward and then two steps back and then two steps forward and one back, you know, like it can get better and worse all within three rides. It's really a funny movement. It's really hard.
Yeah, it is. So you ride those movements, and then at M you turn right. Well, Phil, for our total saddle fit tip of the week, we have Katie Pogon. But as always, we love to talk about this girth because you and I both use them and we love them. Not going to lie, I ended up switching Big Mike from the neoprene to the fleece, and he loves it even more. I'm really, really happy with that. He likes the fleece better, I think.
Okay, but I mean, the biggest thing is just the shape and the way these girths work. And, you know, the switchable liners is really the icing on the cake about you know, being able to try different things with different horses. The design of all these total saddle fit girths is just amazing. They call them the shoulder relief girth because, it applies the pressure in the right places. They're, you know, designed in such a way that, you know, without changing too much, just having a little bit of different girth, your saddle is going to fit a lot better. And your horse is going to appreciate it and move a lot better, which is if we can create a little bit better comfort for the horse and we can get them moving more freely through the shoulders, we don't have to work so hard as trainers to make it happen that's always a bonus for us, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So have any questions, Justin at TotalSaddleFit.com is fantastic to talk to, and you can check out all their products. They have lots of products, lots of different price points that are great. So we hope you check it out.
This week's dressage training tip is brought to you by Total Saddle Fit, home of the shoulder relief girth, at TotalSaddleFit.com.
Well, tonight for our Total Saddle Fit tip of the week, we are so happy to have our friend and small art judge and FEI rider and trainer, Katie Pogue, on the show. Katie, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we have missed you, and we wanted to get you on the show again. We haven't had you on in a couple months, and so how are things? You are a judge now. What happened?
It's a lot of fun. I have enjoyed the process and would like to continue. I'm working now towards the requirements for the large R, and it is a process. But it is something that I feel with the riding, the teaching, the competing, it has just made for me a well-rounded circle of everything in dressage, and I just have enjoyed it. And I think my horses have benefited from just more education from that perspective in training, and also in teaching and students and preparing them, the ones that want to compete. And so it has just, it has been exciting, a little bit scary having to officially be the judge and ring the bell and try to keep order of everything in the arena. But it just kind of puts a whole new light on things.
Yeah, and talk a little bit more too about, yeah, the perspective you get from judging and, you know, what is the judge's role and those types of things.
Well, I have definitely kind of a new level of respect for all the judges that are out there, and just, you know, keeping up the timely order of things in the arena, keeping things going, trying to help each rider. And in the process of going through the L program and the small R program, it was, you know, really brought to our attention that it is, you know, we are really out there to help the riders and the riders with their horses, and so that everybody comes away with a good experience and, you know, that they learn something. And so whether it is trying to make sure that we give very constructive, helpful comments, and fair and accurate comments and scores. But also, you know, it's just sitting there and watching the riders, you get to see riders that are very experienced. You know, you are judging people who are very new at competing, and, you know, you can tell the people who have been there, done that, and are very comfortable. You can tell the people who are very nervous and they're trying their hardest. And I think as a rider going in, especially the greener competitors, is just to remember that we are there to help and make it as positive of an experience as possible. And sitting there and watching the riders, you are, you know, I get to judge training level through second level, and you know, you're watching and you're wanting them to, you know, keep the angle in the shoulder in, and, you know, maybe they had a little bobble and you're wanting them to get it organized again or something. And it has just made me realize, and some people are, you know, either frustrated with a judge's score, and it might be legit because it just didn't come together that day, but in trying to walk away from the arena knowing that we're not out there to get you or yeah. to be, you know, critical, that it is such a hard thing to get yourself organized, the horse organized, memorize your test. And, you know, we just see that horse in that moment. And I just want everyone to realize, because they really, you know, wanted to make sure that we understood that. And in the training for the judges program, and now just sitting in the chair, that, you know, you really are their biggest fan, and you really are, come on, do it. You know, that you just, as you're talking to your scribe and giving comments and things like that, you know, you are really feeling like you're cheering this person on and wanting them to do well. And there's just so many things that come with the horse show. And I just want everybody to realize that it is supposed to be fun, and we all love the horses and the sport.
I think, you know, part of the problem, you know, I'm not an official judge, but I've certainly judged my fair share of small, you know, local shows, is part of the problem is that, you know, every time you make a comment, the comment is always, why wasn't the score higher? You know, so your comment is related to that. Like, you know, I always kind of want to say that was pretty good, but, you know, but when you're going through a test, you know, and the rider's riding, you can't say, you know, a positive comment with a negative comment. That's, you know, that's sort of how you get used to coaching. You know, you're like, okay, there was two things about that movement that you just wrote. This was good, but this was lacking. And when you're judging, I think you can only sort of, you know, you give a five, and you have to say what was lacking. Right. And so as a competitor, you get a test back, and there wasn't enough time, you know, unless, you know, a judge's tendency is to give, you know, a seven and say good. But if it wasn't a seven, you have to say, why wasn't it a seven? And that's part of your job. And that leads to sort of a negative impression from when you get and you start reading your test back. You're just like, well, all these comments are just negatives, right? All these comments are just critiques of what I did wrong. You know, that's not, I mean, I know you as a person, that's not a judge as a person, is not a negative person. That's just, you know, like, good job, but I want you to get a better score. So this is what you need: more angle, mm-hmm. more engagement, more, you know, whatever it is, right? There's not enough time or not enough space and to say, you know, great job on this. You know, that's where you get a little bit, it's a little bit of coaching, but only from the negative side, right? And you get a little space, 2 minutes to write at the bottom of the test, you know, good job today. You just needed a little more energy. And so, but by the time you've read through, how, you know, 15 marks, you're already, you know, as a rider, you're already like, oh, this judge doesn't like me. And you sort of like, you can't change it. You know, you can't turn around your mind by the time you read that nice comment on the end, because, you know, all the judges typically will give a nice comment on the end. But I just think like it's hard to get out of the negative feeling by the time you're down to the end, because like I said, it's just the way the sport works and the way that the judging works. It's like, we want to help you, we want to coach you towards better marks. So it can't just be all positive comments and all positive scores, because nobody rides perfect. But but the judge is going to tell you what you need to make it perfect. You know, we're always sort of coaching towards the next
test. Where can you
improve?
Absolutely. Like, where can you improve? That's, you know, the judge wants to say, you know, basically it's like, hey, you know, that was a seven, but here's how you get an eight. And that's what I want to know from a judge. You know, I don't want him to tell me I'm amazing. I mean, that would be great, but, you know, it's like, how do I get?
So I think you just have to take it from a positive, point of view.
Yeah, it's supposed to be as positive as possible. And it was really interesting, because we had to apprentice with certain judges who, you know, some of them are a little bit ahead of us and then in their levels. And then some of them, you know, are at the highest levels of judging and are 5-star judges. And, you know, it is amazing how they can take a thought and turn it into that without putting on the trainer hat and still wearing kind of the judge's hat and trying to come up with the best way to give positive feedback without being just sort of, you know, you shouldn't be riding anymore, because that's, you know, we all want to ride and learn, and we don't want the rider to go away feeling that. and like you said, Reese, and not being fluffy and, right. you know, but just finding, and that was a huge thing in our training, which, you know, as a judge sitting there, you are trying to come up with, and this is what I felt. And in just discussing it, that you really are trying to come up with the best words because you want this person to come away realizing that maybe something, yes, did need some more work at that particular level. Maybe they're not ready or caring enough collection or engagement. And you're trying to make them recognize the good points of it and describe the things that need to be improved upon without making them feel like, you know, that it, the whole thing was bad. And so it definitely, for me, now getting in the arena and judging, there just is so much, I just have so much more respect for those tests that you do get back from a judge, and all the comments are, they just really make sense. They were to the point, and, you know, you came away feeling educated, and you could take it home and go, oh, this is, you know, these things are good and these things need to be worked on. And, you know, hopefully as more judges continue to enter the program and continue to, you know, try to work on the language. And it is hard, and sometimes because of, you know, going through and the test is, you know, as the tests get higher and higher, you know, you have more movements and things come up faster. And, so hopefully with more experience, I will continue to try to be as positive as possible. And, you know, this is my takeaway from the judge's experience. And I just, for me, just sitting there and watching these people who are trying so hard, and you can't be the trainer, to really want them to enjoy this sport and learn from it and come up with the best way to tell them, like you said, Philip, what needs to be fixed and so on and so forth, so they feel like they can fix it and come out at another show and improve and so on and so forth. And, you know, I thoroughly enjoy training horses and teaching students and the judging part, that you're just there to help the person, help the horse, and seeing somebody that has improved, you know, that it'll be cool maybe down the road being able to be a judge and seeing horses that have been coming along, and, you know, just all of that to me is so, just so much fun to watch. And I want, as a judge, it has just made me realize even more so how hard people are working and just trying to, and maybe by somebody not having the best words in their test, that somehow maybe trying to take it home and go, okay, they are really trying to give me pointers. They are really trying to help me. Maybe they just aren't as well-spoken as some.
Yeah. I mean, it's a real challenge. It's a real skill, isn't it? To find the right words, to be not too negative, and to get your point across.
Right.
In a positive way. And I think it's just, you know, kind of, it's like emails. It's like text, you know, you might get a text and read it one way, and the person's intention, there's very little context, you know, and the person's intention was not to be like, you know, negative or but you just, you know, you read it a certain way and it came across a certain way. And that's, I don't think any judge really has the intention of being a negative person. You know, so it's nice to have you come on the show and talk about how judges are trying to say these things in a positive way, like, good job, keep it up, you just need to do this, right? I think that's
how you
read the text. Yeah.
Yeah. So no, fantastic. It is. I have enjoyed it and hope to continue
for many
on
years.
To the large R. Yeah.
You will be amazing for sure. So Katie, tell us real quick, you were just at the Young Rider Championships, right?
We went up to New York, and I have a junior, and she was on the Region 3 team. and she and her three teammates ended up winning the team gold, and she just had a fabulous ride. And another kind of quick moment for the judging. She has a small horse, and when that horse is really accurate and together, she just is like a big moving warm blood. And she held her own, and her test was extremely accurate, and everybody just did so well. And it was just so cool that those kids got just the fairy tale of winning the gold on day one. And it was great. So I'm very proud of Juliet Kane and her little Mariska. And that was her first and last year as a junior. And so we dive into young riders next year. And awesome. I have a couple other kids that will hopefully be working to qualify for next year too.
I love it.
But it was just, it really was a fairy tale, and just coming home with the gold medal was pretty cool, especially after riding in it 23 years ago.
Yeah, that's when Katie and I met. But Katie, you were going to say that.
Yeah, you weren't going to bring that up.
You weren't going to bring that up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
But no, it was pretty cool. It was a great show.
I love it. Well, Katie, thanks so much, as always, for coming on the show. How can our listeners find you online if they're looking for you?
I'm at katiepoguedressage.com, and then I'm also on Facebook. So thank you guys so much for having me, and I enjoyed talking and sharing, and it was great, as always.
Well, as always, we love email and Facebook shout outs. Keep them coming. We always love hearing from you guys. And any questions you have, we will try to answer them or find someone who can. And as always, you can find our show notes and links to today's guests on our website, dressageradio.com. Like us on Facebook, just search Dressage Radio Show. Follow us on Twitter at Horse Radio. My website is maplecrestfarmky.com, and my email is reese@horseradionetwork.com.
I think the best way to find me is probably on Facebook, and my email is philip@horseradionetwork.com. I'd like to thank our sponsors for allowing us to put on a good show, and don't forget to check out all the other awesome shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com.
Everybody, keep your heels down and your shoulders back, and we will talk to you next week.